Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going
to
get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It's about that time. Current Sports is now live right here on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. We've got a great show coming your way on this Thursday, March 14th, 2019. And for those listening here in mid-Michigan, isn't it a beautiful day? Despite it being cloudy and rainy, I mean, we are hitting the 60s today. I can't believe that, folks. We haven't felt this in quite some time. I woke up, walked out of my apartment, and instantly felt the urge to pick up my golf clubs. But duty calls, right? And I'm here with you all, beautiful people, for another sizzling hot edition of WKAR's Current Sports. On today's show, we will be updating you all throughout the hour on what is taking place in the Big Ten men's basketball tournament. Now, Michigan State will not play until tomorrow, of course. Michigan State earning that numero uno seed in the Big Ten tournament out in Chicago at the United Center. So enjoying that double bye, Michigan State will play the winner of the game that's currently taking place on the United Center hardwood, courtesy of the Big Ten Network. Ohio State and Indiana going at it right now. Ohio State, now I really think this is a game in which both the Buckeyes and the Hoosiers are really fighting for their lives, trying to make the NCAA tourney. You know, depending on whatever mock bracket you look at, Indiana and Ohio State are just on the outside looking in. So whoever loses this game, I think we'll be playing in the NIT for sure. We'll see, though. And, you know, if you're a Spartan fan, you know, how are you feeling about this matchup? You know, who do you want to win, Ohio State or Indiana? Ohio State, you did sweep them during the regular season. When it comes to Indiana, you got swept during the regular season. So which team do you want to see more? Do you want some revenge against Indiana, or do you want to play Ohio State, a team that you know for sure you can beat? 20-15 right now is the score. 8-10 left to play in the first half. Again, we'll keep you updated on that matchup throughout the hour. Later on today, around 3 p.m., Nebraska will take on Maryland. At 7 p.m., Penn State and Minnesota. And then to close the night, around 9 p.m., Illinois and Iowa will play. All right. So, again, we'll give you a score update on the first game that's taking place right now. Also, I want to dive into a very intriguing piece that was published by the Lansing State Journal as R.J. Wolcott and Eric Lacy, both two outstanding reporters. They decided, because it's been, 20 years now, they decided to profile what went down here in East Lansing back in 1999, in which, you know, tear gas was thrown, shattered windows, burning cars, multiple flames. Just craziness happened on March 27, 1999, as close to 10,000 rioters hit the streets of East Lansing after Michigan State men's basketball lost to Duke in the Final Four. It's a very interesting piece. You know, I was 9 years old
when this took place. Well, 8 years old, going on 9 years old, when this took place. So I don't remember much at all about it being reported on the news. But, you know, since I've been a reporter here and even dating back to my time as a student here at Michigan State University, you would always hear stories about what happened back in 1999. And Wolcott and Lacey have done a really remarkable job of going back to that time, talking with people who were right in the midst of things during those riots. He even talks to a young woman who had her car overturned and thrown into the flames. It is a great, intriguing piece, a very sad chapter in the history of East Lansing, but pretty fascinating on a lot of different levels. All right, I'll talk about that piece. I will also share my very own story of when I was a student at Michigan State, and when back in 2009, when Michigan State went to the Final Four, I went out to Cedar Village, just like the entire campus did, to just party it up. And I'll share a story of what went down when I was a freshman here at Michigan State. You don't want to miss that. Trust me.
Is this Bagelgate?
No, that was after I graduated. Bagelgate
okay.
was. No, Bagelgate was after I graduated. Bagelgate was nothing compared to any of the riots that you look at in the past here at Michigan State. That was fluff stuff, Jack.
Were no, I'm sure, but it's just such a hilarious story to me. So
it is that's a weird, really weird story, all right? And the story I will share has nothing on what happened in 1999. I spent about 30 minutes perusing through and reading this story from R.J. Wolcott and Eric Lacey, and I could not believe what I was reading. Just craziness. Craziness, folks. All right? So we'll talk about that piece. We will also finally get to our discussion on fan etiquette in light of the unfortunate interactions that Russell Westbrook of the NBA's Oklahoma City Thunder has been having this season. The latest incident concerning a couple in the stands that Westbrook alleges had some pretty racist things to say to him, and he popped off and threatened him, basically. And it just begs to bring up a question based on fan interaction in professional sports, particularly when it comes to the sport of basketball, because in no other major sport are you that close to professional athletes, all right? And then we'll close the show with Throwback Thursday, as we usually do each and every Thursday here on WKAR's Current Sports. This will be a special edition. This is kind of like a throwback show. We're talking about the 1999 MSU riots. And then later on this hour, I was up late last night, as I always am. I'm a night owl. And I was just kind of going through different sound bites that may be cool for Throwback Thursday. But I came across the story of when Tom Izzo was very, 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 very close to allegedly taking the job in the National Basketball Association for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I remember that pretty well as well, because that took place in like June of 2010. I was a sophomore going into my junior year of college here at MSU, and I remember just a hoopla that was that story. And we all thought that Izzo was going to leave us, and Izzo didn't come out and hold a press conference saying initially when this story came out that, no, I'm not going to Cleveland. He actually even traveled to Cleveland. These talks were really real. And I stumbled across last night, I don't know how, how crazy the internet can be sometimes. You just, on YouTube, and you're looking at one video, then you see some recommended videos, and I see this one that has Izzo on it, and he's talking to the media in June of 2010 about why he decided to come back to Michigan State. But what makes this soundbite intriguing is because there was a pretty heated exchange. I've never heard of this. I didn't know this went down, but there was a very heated exchange that went down between Tom Izzo and now the great retired sports writing legend, Lynn Henning. I just want to revisit that for a second, because it just, I feel like it was destiny for me to come across that bite, because I got a few points I want to make about it. And I want to talk about, Izzo's loyalty to Michigan State and what it means in the grand scheme of things that is head coaching here in 2019. All right. So you don't want to miss that. Trust me. All right. So a very busy show. If you would like to be a part of it, Call in 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com. Yes, Facebook is up and running, folks. It's like the world was about to end yesterday because Facebook was down from like 9 a.m. yesterday morning all the way into the night. So Facebook is up now. We couldn't go live yesterday, but we are live right now at Facebook.com/WKAR News. You can comment below the live stream, and you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Here are your quick hit headliners. Okay, as I noted, the Big Ten tournament has officially kicked off. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know that the Spartans are the number one seed and will not see action until tomorrow. But that doesn't mean you can't watch the rest of the Big Ten action, as yesterday, 13th seeded Nebraska edged out Rutgers in a close one, 68-61. James Palmer Jr. was the star of that game, notching 34 points in 40 minutes of action. Nebraska will move on to play number 5-ranked Maryland in the quarterfinals an hour after this show ends at 3 p.m. 11th-ranked Illinois defeated 14th-ranked Northwestern 74-69 in a tight game and will now move on to face the number 6 Iowa team tonight at 9:30 p.m. 9th-ranked Indiana and Ohio State already underway, as I also noted. Behind the glass real quick, we have a live play-by-play update from Jack Kerwin, who has the game on behind the glass. Quick score update, what you got, Jack?
22-20 Buckeyes right now. Caleb Wesson's back playing from suspension for Ohio State as well.
Here we go. All right, Caleb Wesson is back. Again, we'll keep you updated on that game throughout this hour, all right? And the 10th-ranked Penn State Nittany Lions will take on 7th-ranked Minnesota tonight at 7 p.m. All right, LSU men's basketball coach Will Wade says that he should be allowed to coach even if he refuses to sit down to discuss his relationship with convicted middleman Christian Dawkins until after the federal government concludes its investigation into college basketball corruption. This is coming from Wade in a statement. Quote, last week, when the university decided to place me on administrative leave, I accepted the decision without complaint as I knew that they wanted time to reflect on the flurry of media reports. With the benefit of a week to consider the circumstances, I believe university officials should allow me to resume my duties. Again, a statement coming from LSU men's basketball coach Will Wade. Wade's unwillingness to discuss what he said to Dawkins in telephone calls that were intercepted by FBI wiretaps likely means he won't coach in this week's SEC tournament or any of the number 9 Tigers games in the upcoming NCAA tournament, despite what Wade is trying to vie for. He believes he should be on the sidelines. All right, just a few high school girls basketball regional scores I want to pass along to you all from last night. DeWitt over Coldwater, 51-41. Hazlitt beating Jackson Northwest, 51-43. And Pawamo Westphalia topping Granville Calvin Christian, 56-37. The final there. We congratulate DeWitt, Hazlitt, and PW for moving on and keeping their postseason state championship dreams alive. Very cool stuff there. All right, the Miami Heat used a 21-0 run. I kid you not, folks. To open the second half to defeat the Detroit Pistons 108-74, moving within 2 games of Detroit for 7th in the NBA's Eastern Conference playoff chase. The Pistons were blown out for the second time on the 2-game road trip with playoff implications, but the night wasn't a total loss for playoff hopes. The six-seeded Brooklyn Nets and ninth-seeded Orlando Magic both lost. So that's good news there. Reggie Jackson, he stepped on Zaza Pachulia's foot, so this isn't good news, and appeared to re-injure the right ankle that forced him to miss 37 games last year. The Pistons will now next host LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers tomorrow at 7 from LCA. All right, now I pass the mic to Alec Rio, who has an update on the Winged Wheel. What's up with the Red Wings, Alec?
Yeah, so the Wings are desperately looking for a win, having only won one game in the last 12 and have not won a game in regulation in exactly a month when they defeated the last-place Ottawa Senators 3-2 on February 14th. So today, they take on Tampa Bay Lightning at 7:30 p.m., a team who has won 14 consecutive regular season games in a row against Detroit. Young star Philip Zadina will conclude his NHL tryout playing in his ninth and final game of the season before being sent back down. And despite being mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, hopefully they can end that streak. Or, if you're Jack Curran, pray for the L train to keep moving full steam to increase those chances for Detroit to win the Jack Hughes sweepstakes.
And I'm kind of with Jack right now as well.
It's of like, course.
If you're
of
mathematically
course.
Eliminated from the playoffs, why win another game? You know, it's like, I feel it.
Totally but, understand.
Know, the natural competitor that is the professional athlete can't go out there and just mail it in, even though if I'm a GM or a coach, I mean, that's what I would want them to do.
Yeah.
But,
I saw a recent article, actually, where someone called Jack Hughes the, quote, generational talent that could help save Hockey Town.
Is he that good? This dude is that good. He's like the LeBron James of hockey right now.
Nah, not LeBron James.
Good player.
But he's a good player
Very
to
good
have
a
roster to build,
yes.
build around.
Definitely
Correct.
Someone great to build around, but not LeBron James-esque. But,
okay.
So,
hard to do that in hockey anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hockey. All right.
But
you
can catch that action on Fox Sports Detroit.
Okay, FSD, folks. Yeah, the Wings, and now my Pistons are losing. Just goodness gracious. All right, the Detroit Tigers taking on the Boston Red Sox. The Tigers will probably finish in the final, you know, final records of the MLB year when this thing is said and done as well. But, hey, I don't want to get ahead of myself. The season has not gotten underway. We're talking spring training baseball right now. The Tigers and Bo Sox right now in spring training action in Lakeland, Florida. The game is being broadcast on Fox Sports Detroit. It was just on Tuesday that the same two teams met, and the Tigers were able to defeat the Boston Red Sox 4-3. The Tigers sit at 500 this spring training with a 9-9 record. Also want to pass along to you guys that a single trade deadline, an all-star game election day, and $1 million bonus for the home run derby winner are the three main rule changes that will be implemented in 2019 in the MLB, and a three-batter minimum for pitchers and roster expansion will happen in 2020 as part of a deal between the MLB and the MLB Players Association. And last and certainly least, in a video published by TMZ today, UFC fighter Conor McGregor can be seen and heard using his left foot to stomp on a smartphone he allegedly took from a man outside the Fontainebleau Miami Beach Hotel. McGregor then allegedly left with the man's phone. In the video, he appears to pick up the phone after stomping it. Conor McGregor, he's a smart one, isn't he? All right, that does it for your quick hit headliners. Again, multiple ways in which you can join the conversation. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You know, I'm curious, as we segue in just a moment to discuss the really fascinating piece reported by R.J. Wolcott and Eric Lacey of the Atlantic State Journal. I am curious if I have any listeners. I'm sure I do. Don't be shy, because I want to know if I have any listeners out there who were students, who maybe were down at Cedar Village when this took place back in 1999. I'm curious if I have any residents who lived in the area during that time back in 1999. If you do have a firsthand account of what went down in the 1999 East Lansing riots when the Michigan State men's basketball team lost to Duke in the Final Four, I would love to hear your story. 517-355-WKAR. Again, you can weigh in at facebook.com/WKAR News. Just comment below the live stream, and you can join the convo on Twitter. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. We now begin our discussion period here on WKAR's Current Sports. Again, first off, we will be updating you throughout the hour on what's taking place in the Big Ten tournament. And the game that is underway right now has certain interest to Michigan State fans because the winner of this matchup will play Michigan State tomorrow, a little after noon, 12:30 p.m. to be exact. So, yes, that game will be taking place while I am on the air during the Friday version of Current Sports. But Michigan State will play the winner of Indiana and Ohio State. And right now, I'm looking at my feed here on ESPN. I have it Ohio State 31, Indiana, and the score is changing. Indiana 28. Is that accurate? That's what you see, Jack? Yeah, Jack is giving me the thumbs up. 31-28 right now in favor of Ohio State with just under like 2 minutes left to play in the first half. And, you know, another question I want to throw out there. I mean, who do you want to play? Because Indiana is a team that did sweep the Spartans during the regular season. I know Spartan fans are still salty about that. I mean, I didn't expect that. Nobody expected Indiana to sweep the Big Ten Conference regular season champion, Michigan State Spartans. But, you know, basketball and sports can really be funny and can be quite unpredictable at times. So, you know, do you want to play Indiana, you know, thrice? It's so hard to beat a team three times. That's the old cliche, right? You know, to beat a team three times, I mean, that just does not happen. So I could see that argument as well. If you do play Indiana and beat them, you know, I just can't see Indiana doing it three times in the season. But when it comes to Ohio State, I mean, you look at the two victories that Michigan State had over the Buckeyes during the regular season, and they were pretty easy for the most part, you know. Do you want to play Ohio State knowing that you'll have a much easier game? Because frankly, looking at what happened in those first two games against Indiana may make you nervous just a little bit, but I don't think you get nervous at all when you think of Ohio State, especially when you look back at what happened during the regular season. And also, again, want to pass this along to you guys in case you've been living under a rock yet again. Nick Ward will be returning after not playing for what? You know, now like 4 weeks. It's been about 4 weeks since we've seen Nick Ward suit up in a green and white jersey and get out there on a basketball court and play. He actually fractured that hand against Ohio State. That second matchup against Ohio State is when Nick Ward broke that hand. And, you know, that, of course, led to him sitting out. But he will make his return tomorrow. If I had to guess, it will be in limited minutes. For me, out of the two teams, I guess Ohio State, I guess, because, again, based on which I'm just going off based on what we saw during the regular season. But either one of these teams, the fact of the matter is, I mean, either one of these teams, whoever ends up pulling out the dub, Michigan State should win. But as I stated earlier this week, and I got a lot of heat for it, I had people texting me and a few people hopping into my Facebook DMs. I would much rather Michigan State lose that opening game. I just think that the Big Ten tournament, you know, these end of the year conference tournaments, unless you are a bottom barrel team like Indiana and Ohio State are, you know, fighting for your NCAA tourney lives, this tournament means nothing. I don't know what Michigan State can get out of this. If they get eliminated tomorrow, I won't be crying a river, folks. Michigan State, rest up and get ready for the tournament that matters, the NC2A tourney. So 23 seconds left, Ohio State 33, Indiana 28 in the first half. All right. What I want to do right now, though, is talk about a piece that, man, it had me glued to my laptop screen, you know, early this morning, because, you know, you hear about riot talk a lot amongst the student body here at Michigan State around this time of the year. Just for the simple fact of just looking at the history here in East Lansing when it comes to Michigan State men's basketball success or lack thereof around this time of the year, students can be so unpredictable. You just don't know. You don't know how they're going to react to a loss or a win. And we've seen in the past things get a little bit ugly. And the ugliest that it ever got was back in 1999. And I want to remind you all, this is when success from Tom Izzo in the Spartans was relatively new. You know, this is when Izzo began to really set the foundation that is Michigan State basketball, the Michigan State basketball that we know today. All right, this kind of success was relatively new to the area in the world of college hoops, new to students in the world of college hoops. So this piece, a fascinating read from R.J. Wolcott and Eric Lacey in the Lansing State Journal, profiles what happened on March 27th of 1999, in which close to 10,000 rioters. Can you just imagine that? 10,000 rioters, mostly students, I assume, raged through the streets of East Lansing, setting couches on fire, overturning cars, throwing frozen beer cans at police. Just craziness. And one of those cars, by the way, was a police vehicle. And there's a picture of the vehicle in flames in the piece as well from Lacey and Wolcott. But it just blows my mind because when you dive into this piece and you start to read the stories of certain individuals that were a part of the riots, certain individuals who lived in the area when it was happening, you know, your mind just kind of explodes. It's really, really crazy stuff, folks. And it also details how the law enforcement at the time just had no idea because it was new. This was a new thing. You know, these riots that we see nowadays occasionally when Michigan State, you know, come the Big Dance, win or lose, it's become normal now, but it started with what happened in 1999. In 1999, it was all new, and the law enforcement was a bit naive in how they put together the game plan to handle this. And, you know, one of the officers, now East Lansing Police Deputy Chief Steve Gonzalez, who at the time was about 22 years old. He was a 22-year-old officer when this went down in 99. He talks about how there were about a little more than 100 police officers that were called to police and control this riot of 10,000 people, 100 officers, 10,000 rioters. Yeah. You can just imagine how that worked out that night. Just insane, right? I mean, and there was one moment before the police vehicle got set on fire. There was a moment where, you know, the police saw the vehicle, and because they had abandoned it and they had ran right into the thick of things in the riot, and they're trying to control things. And next thing you know, they see the rioters going to the police car. They took a laptop and a radar of some sort from the vehicle. And there's a gun that's in the vehicle as well that they did not see at first. But I guess apparently they noticed after a while, and the police realized that, okay, we got a loaded weapon in there. We should do something about that. We got to recover that gun. So the rioters are making their way to the police vehicle, and the police used, like, rubber grenades, you know, grenades filled with small rubber pellets to, you know, get the crowd to move back a little bit, and also utilizing tear gas so that they could get to the vehicle and at least get the loaded weapon that's in the vehicle. And once they got the loaded weapon, the rioters just kind of overpowered them, and next thing you know, they're setting the police car on fire. I mean, can you imagine that? Can you imagine how crazy that scene was? And then it talks about, you know, and they have, I mean, there's so many pictures from that night posted in this story as well. I mean, I'm looking at a picture right now of, you know, some students living at Cedar Village at the time celebrating at halftime of that final, just as like the calm before the storm, right? Celebrating at halftime on their respective balconies before Michigan State would eventually lose to Coach K. It also talks about, you know, a group of students that lived, you know, right next to Cedar Village, and they had a house, you know, this guy and his buddies, they had, you know, lived in this house that was right in the same vicinity of Cedar Village. And, you know, they're watching the game, and near the end of it, next thing you know, they look out the window and they see just balls of light everywhere outside. And then all of a sudden they open the door and there's just random fires being set, and you can hear, you know, people at Cedar Village and all across East Lansing yelling and just complete chaos ensuing. And next thing you know, people start coming on their lawn and taking, you know, there was a ladder that was laying up against the house. There was also a garbage can that made CNN that night. And they would joke and say, look, our garbage can is more famous than us. You know, the garbage can was being passed around like some rock star jumping into a rock concert crowd. It, just craziness went down that night. And I think the total of and I should have wrote this down when I was reading it at the time, but the total number of fires that were set were like something crazy. Like, oh, it was over 40, if I remember reading that correctly. But just pandemonium ensuing that night. There's a picture of some guy, you know, jumping on some piece of metal that's lodged in between the trunk and the police vehicle, trying to get the trunk open, and people kind of laughing. Just insanity, folks. And you know, there were about like 20 or so people that were arrested that night, right? That's a light number. But that number steadily increased as the days went along, and different photos and video of people came out. And there was also this thing where, you know, I guess the police were offering up money for people who came forth and identified certain people. So there was this thing of just people, you know, that old saying, snitches get stitches. Well, that wasn't the case here, because there was a lot of stitching going on, and there were a lot of people saying, hey, man, I want some cheese. I know this dude. This is him in this photo. He lives here. And there were just multiple people in the coming days getting arrested day after day after day. So, you know, first off, I just want to ask this question. We got, you know, we got Jack Kerwin and Alec Rio live in studio here. They are current students. I know you guys haven't been involved in anything, you know, this crazy. I don't think there's been a riot here in East Lansing for a while. I mean, probably not throughout your respective tenures as students here at Michigan State. Nothing crazy has happened. You guys haven't experienced that, right, Alec? Maybe something small, like a couch set on fire. Nothing like this.
Nothing even close to that. But no. The two of the craziest moments in my life happened my freshman year. So it was after we had beaten U of M off that botched punt. That one obviously was insane, because I remember seeing two dumpster fires and a couch fire, and cops had to show up in riot gear, and they showed up on horseback, like the whole nine yards. They did that. And then another time was actually last year when we beat Penn State off that field goal in football.
Yeah.
someone, I might have mentioned the story on another current sports episode, but
are you talking about the rain game? Or
no,
you...
it wasn't the rain game, but
no, the rain game where it got canceled, where it got postponed for 3 hours.
It got postponed,
yeah.
And then MSU won with a field goal.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
The
game then it had to be. Okay. So
I'm like, what other game that they went on a field goal against Penn State? But yeah.
Yeah. But that game, I remember after that, someone had thrown a can of hairspray that was full of hairspray, and you know how flammable that stuff is. And someone had thrown it into a couch fire, and it had like erupted like in flames and then exploded. It exploded. And like there are people surrounding it like 2 feet away, like from where I am to you. That's how how close people were standing to this fire, which, and then it exploded.
Right, right.
This is just absurd to
me.
Which
is pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy as well.
Yeah.
But nothing, because I can't remember. I think the last time Michigan State made CNN was my freshman year at Michigan State. I think that's the last. And I remember that pretty vividly because that's when, oh, boy, what year? Who did Michigan State beat that year? I can't even recall what. I have to look up what game that was. But I think it sent him to the Final Four that year. And, you know, I remember I lived in Acres Hall, which is right next to it's closer to the edge of campus near Hagedorn. And I lived at Acres. It was my freshman year. And I think actually my two college roommates, they had gone home that weekend. You know, both of them living in the Metro Detroit area at the time, they had went home. So I was just up at Acres by myself, and I had a few friends that I had, you know, just met. We watched the game together, and all of a sudden we're like, oh, we're getting all these calls from people saying that, oh yeah, there's a ton of people at Cedar Village right now. I'm like, Cedar Village? I don't even know what Cedar Village was at the time. I'm this young freshman on campus, and I'm like,
lame.
And that's what happened. I mean, Cedar Village. Another question. Why do students always go crazy at Cedar Village? Is this tradition?
Because it's just the epicenter of where everything crazy happens.
It's not, though. It's like, I mean, well, where I know, but why? Why is it not like?
Because it's like the closest place that's like technically not on campus that people can go to. Because like, there's a lot of people.
Because you don't
want
to do it
on
campus.
Technically, yeah. Because like, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of technicalities that you could get. You know, if you technically set a couch on fire on campus. I don't know. There might be something.
When they said Cedar Village, I'm like, well, I don't know what that is, but all right, let's go out.
You know what? I couldn't even tell you what the reason is because, like, there's nothing nice about Cedar Village. I don't know why Cedar Village is like.
It's not nice.
I don't understand that. I have no idea.
There's just shoes hanging off of wires everywhere you go in Cedar Village.
Exactly. But, yeah, I mean, so, yeah, this is when Michigan State wins at the final. So, anyway, we go outside. I'll never forget this. We got outside. And as soon as we walk outside, it's empty around where we are. I mean, it's kind of like eerily silent where we are. But we could hear in the distance some craziness was going on. We could hear in the distance how loud it was in the distance, not where we were. So we walk, and the closer and closer we got, you just started seeing more and more people. And then all of a sudden, I'll never forget this. I was walking, and all of a sudden, I hear these hooves. Kind of like you just said, Alec, with the horses. I look to my left. There's two police officers on horses, like, and the horses are kind of like in mid stride. They're not walking, but they're in like mid stride running to Cedar Village. So we're like, what in the world is going on? So the closer and closer we got, the sound, of course, got louder and louder and louder. Next thing you know, we get there. I'm like, oh, this isn't too bad. You know, it's pretty loud, but you know, I couldn't see to my right when we hit the corner. We make a right, and in the middle of the parking lot in Cedar Village, I don't know how many people it was, but it was a mass amount of people, and you could feel like heat coming from the middle of it because there was this massive, like I don't know, like pit fire in the middle of the parking lot. So we got closer, and you see just crazy students around this fire pushing each other and jumping around the fire and just throwing stuff. And then you see female students on the shoulders of men just going crazy. It was insane. And then this is when I said, all right, we got to get out of here. I'm chugging up the deuces and getting out of here. I stayed. It was kind of fun at first. You're like, oh, man, this is kind of crazy. You know, this is Michigan State, you know, in the Final Four. But then all of a sudden when the cops came and got in the middle of it and tear gas was thrown, once that happened, I was like, that's it, deuces. I watched it on CNN that night. They had live coverage of it that night. The next week, that month, I think, because it happened on a weekend, that Monday when I was back in class, like my journalism class, we did this whole thing on it. And one of my professors at the time, he was out there in the middle of it, had all of this video and did all these stories on it. And it was just insane. But I'm hoping, and I say this every single year, I'm hoping just students be safe. I'm hoping nothing crazy like this happens again in East Lansing. But it is one of those things, though, that I look back at as a student, it was one of my most memorable moments as a student. But, you know, just I just don't understand why you light couches on fire and why you got to turn over cars and set cars on fire. And I never understood why you have to be destructive while celebrating. But
my favorite thing was when we had beaten Ohio State my freshman year.
Yeah.
And that was off the kick, Michael Geiger doing the windmill celebration
right after that.
And so there was about 400, 500 people in Cedar Village. And it was all snowy. You remember that, right?
Right.
And there was like a 400 to 500 person snowball fight. And some people were like throwing snowballs at the cops that were there. And I remember one kid in particular, he had thrown one at a cop. And like the cop looked at him and tracked him down. And like he had sent himself and two other cops, like they marched after him and then just arrested him and like took him to jail and stuff, which
insane,
was just
man. Absurd
to me.
It was insane. And I was a student. I was right there in the midst of it. It's college, man. You know, I'm a freshman. I'm like, all right, let's go see what the commotion is. And I was right there witnessing it all. So crazy stuff. I want to hear from you guys out there. We got a few comments coming in courtesy of facebook.com/WKAR News. Kirk, I do see you as well. If you want to call in, just like my man Kirk, 517-355-WKAR. We'll take your calls and comments on the other side of this first break. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Just finished up talking about, you know, the piece from R.J. Wolcott and Eric Lacey of the Lansing State Journal. They do a really good job profiling what went down in late March back in 1999. The biggest riot that we've ever seen in East Lansing history. Check it out if you got some time. You know, it's intriguing on a lot of different levels. Let's go to our phone lines right now. We've got Kirk from Grand Ledge on line one. What's up, Kirk?
Not a whole lot, Al. Listening to you guys talk about Cedar Village took me back, you know, because as you guys are well aware, I'm a little bit older than you are.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was sitting here thinking about the celebrations, it took me back to when Irvin won the national championship, or Irvin and Greg Kelser and them won the national championship in 79.
Yeah.
And there were all kinds of people in the streets and stuff then, but there wasn't any of the madness and insanity and destruction and stuff that went on. And I was also a student who lived in Cedar Village in the 79-80 academic year when Cedar Fest was, I think, in their second or third year running. They're not allowed to have it anymore because of the insanity that went on.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first years of Cedar Fest, it was just a big, fun, three-day block party, and there wasn't any of the craziness in terms of destruction or aggressiveness or whatever went on. So I'm not sure where the evolution of the destruction came from. What did make me wonder about the athletic stuff is the change from, you know, Michigan State used to be on a trimester system and now they're just on a semester system. When that national championship happened in 1979, the third trimester had just kind of started.
Right.
So maybe there wasn't that much stress and strain about you know, your classes or whatever going on since classes had just started for the third trimester, as opposed to being in the middle of a semester and maybe just coming off midterms and people being stressed out and partying too much and things. But I'm just guessing here because I, for the life of me, it makes no sense whatsoever to ruin a great celebration by starting to destroy stuff.
I'm with you. I just don't understand it. I get going out and partying it up and doing it in a fashion where it's not chaotic, but the destruction and the chaos, I just don't understand that, Kirk. You got me there, man. So, well, but yeah, I can only imagine what that was like back in the late 70s, though. Yeah, when Michigan State did win the national championship with Irvin Magic Johnson, that had to be pretty fun.
That was a great time.
That's all you'll say right there. Just leave it at that, right?
but I will say this in terms of things like Cedar Fest, is there, and who knows, you know, what the amount of non-MSU students participating in some of these celebrations are. But I know that just before they broke up Cedar Fest, you know, when they had the last time they had the massive amounts of arrests and stuff, it was like 3/4 of the people that were arrested were not MSU students. They were people that were friends of somebody who came in or had heard about the party and just came in uninvited, so to speak. And I imagine that there are lots of folks who come into, you know, if you're a student, if I'm a last year senior or something at MSU, and, you know, it might be fun to have a bunch of my friends come up and watch an important game, a tournament game or whatever, a championship game, with me on campus to be there in case there's a celebration or whatever.
Right.
And that's a variable that I don't know how to track or how to think about. But
what in the piece, Kirk, this is what it says. In the piece that was published by LSJ, in all, talking about 1999, in all, 71 MSU students were charged in the aftermath of the riot, 8 of whom were initially suspended from school. A dozen students from other schools were charged, along with 49 people who weren't college students. So, yeah. There you have that. That's just a small sample size from 1999.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Anyway, like I said, I don't understand why you need to destroy stuff to have a good time, because I will guarantee you we had a good time in the 70s and early 80s. So.
Oh, I'm sure. I don't even have to question that. All right. Thank you, Kirk.
Take care, Al.
All right. Again, 517-355-9527. And, you know, LSJ today, they've also published the history of riots, fires, and celebrations linked to MSU. They start with October 29th in 1983. That's when people in Cedar Village, of all places, put the city's anti-block party ordinance to the test to kick off MSU's homecoming weekend festivities. A crowd of 1,500 people, police arrested 37 people, smashed the windows of a police car during the melee. And an officer breaks his noise and suffers a his nose and suffers a mouth injury, requiring 12 stitches to close the wound. On May 18th, 1985. There were more than 4,000 people at Cedar Fest. There was damage caused by bottle-wielding partygoers. 1,200 to $2,500 in damage. Four to 6,000 people at Cedar Fest. My goodness. Also, Cedar Fest in 1985 of October. 17 arrests, 200 citations. 1986, Cedar Fest again. 1,500 people there. Cedar Fest again in 1986, October 25th and 26th. The previous one that same year was May 18th and May 17th and 18th. $24,000 in damages on October 25th and 26th. Also, Cedar Fest in May of 1987, 300 officers trying to prevent Cedar Fest. 1989 Cedar Fest, 1997, throwing rocks after the Western Michigan game. 1998, the Munfield alcohol ban sparks a riot. I've heard stories about that one. 1999, again, that's what we've been profiling today. 2003, the fires after the NCAA tournament loss in 2005. 2,000 people and lots of tear gas, grenades. 2008 Cedar Fest returns. 2009, as I mentioned, when I was a student, Michigan State going to the Final Four. And they do, and I guess Ben is asking about the bagel tossing. So Ben doesn't know about the bagel tossing incident that happened in 2015, October 17th. People began tossing bagels in the air outside the Cedar Village apartment complex after the MSU football team's last-second victory over Michigan in Ann Arbor. Police arrest some for disorderly conduct. Video from cell phones shared on social media show a few couches and other furniture also set on fire. So you profiled that a bit, Alec, and you brought up the bagel tossing, Jack. I just don't understand why you tossed bagels. But all right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's current sports with an interesting edition of Throwback Thursday. We'll be right back.
I need to bring this up, I think, because Dr. Simon initiated this tonight, Tom, and it was sort of a blanket indictment of media, and it wasn't appreciated, and I'll tell you why. This has been going on for nine days now.
9 days, not 9 weeks.
Well, it seems like 9 weeks to you.
To you. You made it that way.
Well, I'm not sure who's got the longer duration here. But, Tom, this can't be covered in a vacuum. And I appreciate what Dr. Simon was saying about some of the recklessness, but if there was recklessness, then it needs to be delineated in the specific people and the specific offenders, not a blanket indictment here of media, because we took this responsibility very seriously, and we were doing it sans any comments from Michigan State University. That makes for a very difficult row to hoe.
Okay.
I hope that's understood. Now, cut to the chase, please, on LeBron James, if you can, Tom, and I know that
Oh, wait, let's answer that question first.
Okay, please.
Let's go to that question first. Number one, you haven't been up here very often.
I've been
over
in the
state,
last
three years, because you have other duties.
I've been in the state for 58 years.
No, 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 up here. You haven't been in my building. You haven't been with me. I have great respect for you, but you have not been up here covering Michigan State basketball very often in the last 4 or 5 years that I know.
That would be correct.
Okay, so if you would have been, the media that covers me a lot, I had a big dinner for them, and I told them that things are changing in the media. You know, the bloggers drive us all nuts, drive you nuts. The people throw things on the wall, and it can affect my family. My kid comes home crying, and there's no truth to any of it. And so I did something this year with Kalen Lucas that is well known, and I can't get into the people because it's unfair, because since then I think I've rectified that with the person that I was involved with and probably have a better relationship with him now than I used to have. But I was told that I say too much to the media, that I'm too honest, that I'm too upfront. Some of your compadres in here have told me, don't be so honest. Don't tell them too much. Don't do that. I think you got to give me a credit, the ones that were in that room. I did a hell of a job of not saying one word. I took, not to blanket you, because I think you're right. I can pick apart the people in this room. I did not appreciate your column. I did not appreciate you saying the Michigan State fans are sick of it and had it with me.
I didn't say that.
Well, how did you say it?
Well, I said it quite differently from that.
Okay, tell me what you said. And
I said that if your heart had been somehow compromised by this particular overture from the Cleveland Cavaliers, then you probably owed it to yourself and to Michigan State to move on.
But I've gone so far that I can't come back. Is that right?
I said there was a part of it that would be irretrievable.
Well, so I think, you know, you gave fancy words. I just give you P words. You didn't come back. You can't come back, Tom. And I was offended, Lynn, that you would say that, because I think you've been a friend. I have great respect for your writing, but you never even knew what was going on. Try. You know how you couldn't get any information out of me? That was because the group of people decided that that was best for me. And I asked, how can I do a better job for the media? Because it's out of control. I've got people that call me at 1 or 2 in the morning and say to me, I had to check on it because it was in the Red Cedar. And these are real reporters with class and dignity. And I said, you're reading that? You're going by that? I mean, if you would like after this to give me your opinion on how I could do my job better to help you, Tom, I think I've proven over 15 years I've been as media friendly and available as any coach.
And you have.
In the country. So I was offended by that, Lynn. And you gave a bunch of fancy words. The bottom line is, it went too far.
Tom, I think
you never called.
And I don't want this to degenerate into a debate between us here. So
it won't.
So it and unfortunately, I contributed to that. But no, I called you last Monday, and my point is this: there was no callback last Monday. There has been absolutely no remarks made by anybody, including the president, until today. We can't just let Tom is. Excuse me, then. All right, I stand in error. I apologize, Dr. Simon. Apologize.
It's like a town hall meeting here now, and I kind of like that.
The community.
This is more like the UP now. Let's get after it a little bit. Yeah. Let's get after it a little bit.
Oh man, that's your throwback Thursday snippet. I wanted to switch it up today to a moment in Michigan State history in which Tom Izzo held his press conference when it was a lot of rumors going down that. Would he go to the Cleveland Cavaliers to coach LeBron James? And that was the interaction that Tom Izzo had with Hall of Fame sports writer Lynn Henning. You just kind of forget how dramatic that moment was. And the fact that Izzo decided to return and not go to the NBA, which was a great move in hindsight, right? And that he's been here at Michigan State for so long just really speaks to Izzo's loyalty. But that was my first time hearing how heated that exchange got between Henning and Izzo. So just wanted to play that for you. That was quite entertaining as well. All right. All right, folks. Ohio State is up by 9, right, Jack, right now?
Yes, sir. 42-33 at the under 16.
Thank you. We'll recap that game tomorrow and as well give you an update on MSU basketball. See you Friday, folks. Be easy.